Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Why didn't you ever tell me you were in love with me?
You were married to my best friend. At first, I thought it was harmless infatuation, something hormonal rather than emotional.
Then when the months went by and the three of us began spending more time together,
I realized that it was something else, and it wasn't right. But although I would never act on it, I couldn't help the way I felt.
And when Jack died, you felt guilty.
I felt guilty before he died. Having feelings like that for my best friend's wife. And then later, after the accident, I promised myself that I would never tell you how I felt. It would be like betraying my friend.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and I am pushing the button here. Hold on. Okay, good.
Push that button.
I push the button that turns on all the magical mayonnaise machines, all the Willy Wonka style machines. Rube Goldberg, that's another machine type. What's another machine type thing? What's another reference to machines? Jesse, come on. Machines. Dan?
Like the Leviathan.
Okay.
What? That's a sea creature.
All right. Well, that's not working out, so I'm going to stop the machines riff. And I'm
what are you talking about, machines?
I was doing a thing with machines. I stumbled into a thing with machines. I don't know why. I started talking about machines. To piss you off. No, I wasn't trying to piss you off, Dan.
I didn't. Everyone's acting like I'm pissed off.
No, you've created
this fiction around me.
No, this is Jesse's doing. This is Jesse. We've got two Jessies tonight, so I'm talking about regular
Trouble
Jesse.
Trouble Jesse.
Troublemaker Jesse.
Yeah, Trouble Jesse.
Okay, but we have started.
Jesse Crinkles.
I have pushed the button, which obligates us to continue. I mean, we can't.
There's no turning back.
There's no turning back as we've pushed the button and all the devices are whirring and doing all their business. So let's get the beginning stuff out of the way here. This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Go ahead, number one.
Who's number one?
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast. Mm-hmm. And see, you've thrown me totally off with that. It was very charming, but you've thrown me off.
This is no different than what I do every week.
How it feels.
You throw me off every week.
Oh, all this time.
No, it's charming, though.
But he throws you off every week.
So we all throw each other off every week?
Not me, necessarily, but you guys.
Jesse continues to be blameless.
I'm taking no responsibility.
Jesse's a pot stirrer. Tonight's episode is called Stir in the Pot. With regular Jesse. Okay.
Your information is incorrect.
It's got Star Trek. And this is episode number 255.
Wow.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
2055.
And this week we have the excellent good fortune of being joined by Jesse. Other Jesse from the Crusher Convo podcast.
Yet another.
So we've developed a habit of having on guests who are named Jesse.
Various Jesses. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say. You got to make Isaac. Sure to say where I'm from.
Yes. Yeah. So Jesse from Crusher Convo. So regular Jesse, guest Jesse. That's probably as good as a way as any.
I like Jesse Crinkles.
Sounds good.
I'm Jesse Crinkles.
All right. Yeah. Jesse Crinkles.
Oh, no. That was my fault.
What am I?
Jesse Convo.
Jesse Convo.
Jesse Convo.
Jesse Crushers.
Acceptable audio.
Jesse Crusher.
Yes. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This week, Jesse.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Minister.
We are very, very excited to have you join us. And I was on, last night.
No.
Yesterday.
Yes.
Yesterday, right? Because this is this is Monday, in quotes.
This is Monday.
Oh, yeah. Quote, unquote.
This is
you
midnight.
You were on yesterday.
It's midnight on Monday for all our friends who are in different time zones and like to listen at midnight. We've got people who on the West Coast who listen to us because they can download us at 9 on a Sunday. And then we've got our friends in Australia land and other places that they can hear us on the way to work or on the way home. I forget. I don't know.
Spartans. This is ridiculous.
It is a bit ridiculous. But
it's a little bit.
Long story short, we are happy to hear you. I was on your program on Crusher Convo. We were discussing another Jonathan Frakes directed episode because we haven't mentioned which episode we're discussing this week yet, but it is also directed by Jonathan Frakes. But on your show, you and I had an excellent discussion about Cause and Effect.
Great episode.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Which, as I noted...
Did we do that one?
We did do that
one.
And it's funny that you don't remember because of the whole time loop.
I remember.
Because of the time loop thing.
We're in a time loop, just like the episode.
I am always in a time loop.
Oh, okay.
That's
a fair observation. But yes, we had I had a wonderful time joining you, and I hope everyone goes and checks it out on your podcast, Crusher Convo, or YouTube is a good opportunity because we did video.
Yep.
Because we don't do so much video here on It's Got Star Trek, but
we need to get into video.
Yes, we do. And Jesse's got such an awesome
setup.
It's loads
of fun.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's loads of fun when you do video.
Yeah.
I've had a blast this season going from just audio content to video content. It's just been crazy, crazy fun. But we did it on Star Trek Day, so we have to celebrate that because that was yesterday.
September 8th.
Hooray!
Yeah, so I definitely dropped a lot of things on my socials about, none other but Beverly Crusher, obviously. So, if you want to go back to my socials and look all that up, you can. But yeah, we had lots of fun. So thank you for joining me because I know that's your favorite episode. So.
Yes, I love Cause and Effect.
It's just such an efficient episode. I don't know. There's something about it.
I know. Jesse, you were suggesting it'd be great. You could have one or both of these other gentlemen, Jesse or Dan,
one of these two knuckleheads over
join
here.
You. I actually thought it'd be hilarious when I was thinking about this. I haven't broached the topic with them, but I said we should try to get them on your podcast to discuss Cause and Effect.
Do like another one?
Yes.
Well, we have like a whole series of Cause and Effect episodes.
Yes.
It'll be one of each. So I did Patrick, then Dan's next, then Jesse, and then we're all.
Our uniforms
and we're all
going to
say the same dialogue.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just couldn't resist.
It would turn into some sort of bizarre performance art where it's just like all we do is Cause and fucking Effect over and over again.
Over and over again.
Okay. So everyone, yes, go check out Crusher Convo. But this week we are discussing another TNG episode, Attached.
I smell gas.
Hey.
Which is another great episode, classic. It's in that seventh season, and the seventh season
has
all sorts of peculiarities.
It has some hit or miss.
Yeah.
Real hit or misses.
But partly because they were like, let's do some crazy
They're just riding it out.
Yeah. Like, it's the seventh fucking season. We can just do some...
Just go all out.
Do some bizarre stuff.
Well, I thought this was an excellent episode, I thought. It's about Picard's relationship.
Tell me what it's about.
Well, what I was...
What is it about, Dan?
Are you serious right now? Are you serious right now?
I mean, yes, but I don't think in the way you mean. I think you've taken my exuberance to be me implying something. No, I honestly am interested in your interpretation of what the message of the episode is.
All right.
I thought it's about it's about Picard's relationship with Beverly, obviously, but it's expertly woven into this other plot about the Kes and the Prit.
Yes,
that itself could have stood alone as its own episode.
Who come from the planet Kesprit.
But the
message of that of the B plot is these guys are all assholes.
So I like how they sort of put these two plots together, like, and they sort of affected each other. Yeah, the Kesprit. Do you think that the planet was named first and then the people, because the people split up and they're like, well, in order for it to be fair, we need to share the name. So you get the Kes part and I get the Prit part. So you think they named the planet Kesprit first, or do you think that they named the planet Kesprit because there is the Kes and the Prit? Which is the chicken or the egg? The chicken or the egg?
Which one has a bigger hold on the planet? Like, is
The Kess.
I think the planet was named Kesprit, and then when they split because they couldn't agree, they're like, "You're now the Prit, we're the Kess."
That makes sense.
I'll go with that.
I didn't put too much thought into it because every time I heard Kesprit, it made me think of some sort of food or something. It meant like some sort of pasta, something fried.
I did not think about that.
I don't like you know what it is. It sounds like Hasprat,
a Bajoran Hasprat.
And I always wondered what a Hasprat was because on Deep Space Nine, Kira was always ordering Hasprat.
Is it like a curry?
I don't know. Yeah, is it a chili or a goulash? Some sort of goulash.
Kesprit 3.
Mm. Oh, speaking
it's
of
probably a Vulcan dish that Beverly was going to offer to Picard.
There were two pronunciation things going on, two different pronunciation incongruities in this episode. So, there's like
we have a bunch of other stuff we're supposed to do.
Okay, let's get back to it.
We got excited and started talking about the episode, and I bet it's like all these people listening to our podcast is like, why haven't they jabbered on about a bunch of bullshit?
Yeah.
You guys are the ball this week.
Okay.
Well, maybe it was a fluke.
All right. So let me just go through a couple things. Get us back on track here.
All right.
Yeah, especially we've got our lovely guest, Jesse, here. We have to put our best faces forward.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So far, so good.
A reminder that folks can check out our Patreon.
Agreed.
We have a growing library of bonus content on the Patreon. And there's some free stuff there as well. So,
of course.
Go check it out.
Of course.
There's some really good stuff there. We have to mention that.
I'm a member.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Next up, review haikus. So, just to keep everybody.
Do we have any new reviews?
Well, that's where I'm getting
at. Do we have any new haikus?
Because I didn't make any new haikus.
Because we don't have any new reviews.
Okay.
Because.
Let's use AI.
So we're on the same page.
Everyone up to speed because, you know, this is one of those podcasts where some people, you know, last week we talked about Voyager, another Jonathan Frakes directed episode, by the way. We're all thoroughly dunking in Frakes this week.
We're all Frakes out.
But last week was Voyager, and some people maybe they're not going to watch the Voyager episode, but they're into the TNG episode, so maybe they're listening this week. So, what are we talking about? What we're talking about is that a couple of weeks ago, Dan, for whatever reason, promised to provide a bespoke, that is to say, custom, non-AI generated haiku for anyone who gave us a podcast review.
You're absolutely right.
Yes. So a review, a haiku for a review is the deal. And we in the intervening time, we got two reviews.
Yeah.
And Dan produced two haikus.
For two reviews.
Woo! And those haikus were read on last week's podcast.
A review for us, a haiku for you.
Yes. That's the deal. So no reviews this week, according to our review aggregator service.
Maybe
it's an email. Well, we have aggregator. Not aggravator. We do not want to aggravate the reviews. Just grab the reviews and shake them.
We didn't
get any reviews that we're aware of. If you did write a review,
maybe I chased them away with my haikus.
If you wrote a review in something that is not covered by our review aggravator service. I said it correctly that time, didn't I?
You said aggravator. I thought you were doing it on purpose as a joke.
No, I swear to God, in my brain I said aggregate.
Oh, no, you aggregate. Said aggravator.
Okay. Our review aggregator.
That's it.
Our review aggregator.
Review aggregator.
A review alligator.
Review aggregator.
They're new print friends.
Alligator.
Long story short, send us an email if you write a review to tell us you wrote a review, because maybe your review doesn't show up in our aggravator.
For you. Aggravator.
Nope.
Scattered
minutia.
Send them in because I enjoy Dan's haikus. It's fun. Okay.
But you're not getting one today.
If
you want a haiku, you got to get a review. Give a review.
Speaking of,
for your thoughts.
This is a carefully structured and planned segue. Speaking of haikus, .. Here is a voicemail from Isaac.
Oh, tight.
And Dan is in control of voicemails this week. And here's the voicemail.
Sabotage.
Nope.
Just kidding.
Hey, guys. Isaac from Tasmania here. Really enjoying your show continuously, weekly. Thank you for the content. I loved the addition of haikus last week.
Nice.
And it got me thinking that I'd like to write you guys a haiku. Ah. And then, a bit like the cool but rude/crude saga, I've got a word that I want to use in a haiku, but I haven't been able to tell if it's 3 or 4 syllables. And I thought, who better to ask than you dinguses? So here's the word. I'll say it twice for you. Holograms?
Holograms?
I can't tell if it's 3 or 4 syllables, so if you could work that out for me. But I have written you guys a haiku. I hope you like it. Where's my haiku, Dan? Where's my fucking haiku, Dan? Fucking haiku, Dan. All right. Hope you enjoyed that. Loving everything that you do, guys. Big fan over here. I'll tell everyone in Tasmania to listen to you, and they're like, what? So yeah, keep it up. Hope the listeners increase due to that. And yeah, catch you soon. Bye.
Thank you. I heard that.
That was a great haiku.
How many people live in Tasmania? It's like 50
people. Fair number. Don't they have like 30, no, is it 34 political parties, or is it?
Oh yeah.
Or is it just 34 seats in their parliament? I don't know.
That's a lot.
I want to play the part where he said the holograms again.
Okay. Bye.
Fucking haiku.
Oh, no, that's not it.
Close. Starts with an H. It's fine.
A haiku.
Okay, no, it's not there. Sorry, this is the
I like most I like Dan's live audio editing feature. Yeah. This is funny. It eats up some time.
Yeah, on a program that wasn't really geared towards doing that either.
I can't tell if it's 3 or 4 syllables, so if you could wait.
Oh, it's just before that. We're okay. Almost there, guys.
Almost.
We're almost finished.
Holograms. Holograms.
There you go. Well, there you go.
Okay. All right. Holograms.
Holograms.
Thank you.
Hologram.
Thank you, Isaac.
Thanks, Isaac. That was a great haiku. I loved it.
He also does Where Will I Stay? That's
good. Haiku was
Where Would I Stay?
Haiku was really good.
Do you have a recording of Isaac doing Where Will I Stay?
No, I mean, it's old voicemail.
It's a few episodes back, yes.
Okay, we'll root through that during the break. We'll take a half an hour.
Okay, during the break.
Scattered minutia.
Isaac, thank you. Okay, so Isaac's main question was, how many syllables are in the word holograms?
Dingus.
Now, the thing is that holograms has 3 syllables in the bulk of
typically,
in the bulk of English speaking nations.
Hologram.
It is a 3-syllable word. However, Australians are known to add syllables to certain vowel clusters, lengthening words like nar.
My wife does that.
Is she Australian?
No.
Is she Australian?
No.
And I've often wondered if this adding of syllables to single syllable vowel clusters, like in the word nar, if that's related to the propensity for Australians to use abbreviations or sort of weird little nicknames, fun, charming little nicknames like Arvo for afternoon or Avo for avocado.
What?
How about this?
Do they really
game.
Say that?
They, according to the internet, according to the old internet, they did.
That's not true.
I don't know if you should trust the internet.
Everything on the internet is 100% true. How about this? I'll put it out.
That's not true.
I'll put it out to the group here. We have three contestants for this contest. what is this Aussie slang term short for? So, this term is mozzie. Mozzie. What do you think that term is short for?
I hear it in a sentence?
That might give it away. There's a lot of mozzies. There's a lot of mozzies around.
Yeah, it's some kind of like furry creature.
Okay, Dan says it's a furry creature. How about guest Jesse? Jesse Convo?
Go to regular Jesse.
Regular Jesse.
Jesse Crinkles.
Jesse Crinkles. What do you think it is?
Mozzie is a bad person.
I think they have a lot of slang terms for that, but no. Any thoughts, Jesse?
Mozzie. Oh, gosh.
Mozzie. It might be a particular problem in the summer.
Mozzie Bear.
Waka waka.
There's a problem in this. There's Spiders.
Well, in the Aussie summer, which would be our winter, I presume. Yeah. Mozzie is short for mosquito.
Oh, I should have. Okay. Right. Yeah, because that would fit. Cool. No, that would.
Dang it.
I don't know why I wasn't thinking along those lines, because you specifically said, Patrick, they abbreviate certain things. Yeah. And like.
And say, instead of saying skeeter.
Yeah. Yeah.
They say Mozzie.
What about this? What about.
I'll do better on this one.
Okay. What about servo?
A
servo.
Gotta
go down by the servo.
The it's like the restaurant where they serve you.
All right, that's Dan's guess. Either Jesse can jump in with a guess. Servo. Gotta go down to the servo.
A service station.
That's right, Jesse. Ah! That's just regular Jesse.
Yeah,
got
what he said.
English.
After that, you go on Smoko.
Yeah.
Smoko's the next one. Right? I knew everyone would know it.
It's my break. I work at the servo. I'm going to go on Smoko.
Yeah, well, I was close with restaurant.
There we go.
Sort of.
Well, okay. How about this? How about tradie? Or tradie? Tradie? I don't know exactly how you pronounce it.
This game is kind of exhausting.
Yes. Well, you know, try moving to Australia.
tradie.
It's far away.
Tradie?
Tradie.
Tradie?
Tradie.
Tradie. Tradie? I can't do a proper Australian accent, so I'm doing my best.
Can I hear that in a
is
sentence?
Is it a swap?
I suppose you got to go down to the Home Depot to find yourself a tradie.
A trade?
A tradie. It's short for tradesman. A tradesman.
Yeah, tradesman.
Oh,
yeah.
Tradesman.
Like the guys out
front. I was like, trailer? Yeah. Like, I'm all like, what would be?
How about this one? We have one more, and I think this may be the easiest one, or it may be the hardest. I don't know.
It could be anything.
Usually that it is.
That's like, what a non-statement.
Well, it's a way to generate excitement in
it
the audience.
It could be yes, it could be no.
The audience at home, I assure you, Dan, is now titillated. They're like, what? What the hell is he talking about? What's it going to be? And what the fuck does this have to do with Star Trek?
I don't get it.
The word is Ute.
Oh, it's like the two Utes. Like in My Cousin Vinny? Ute?
It's not My Cousin Vinny.
The two Utes. What is a Ute?
Yeah, okay. you are distracting yourself and pulling yourself in an entirely wrong direction.
It's a youth.
It's not a youth, Dan.
The two Utes. Youths.
Jesse or Jesse. What do you think a Ute is? I'll tell you, it's a noun. It's widely used across Australia.
Utogram.
Ute.
Ute. Uterus.
No, it's not.
No.
I don't know how often you need to have a slang term for uterus. But no, in this case... No, Dan. It
is not. No,
you're
Dan.
Saying this is the easiest?
Yeah.
Well, it's one of those ones that, I don't know, because I got to read it. But when you read it, you're like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Ute.
I get it.
How Ute. Is it spelled?
U-T-E.
Oh.
Ute.
And you say it's a noun.
It's a noun. It describes a thing.
I thought you said it was a thing.
I mean, it is a thing. Yeah,
an
a
adjective
word.
Describes
no, no, no,
a thing.
No. It's a word describing the thing. I'm overly
you first you said it was a noun,
no,
then you said it was an adjective.
Yes, but a noun, by definition, is a word that describes a thing.
No, an adjective is a descriptor. No, a noun is a thing.
Okay. We're having a semantic debate here that is irrelevant. No guesses anymore? No, anybody?
Is it a youth?
I already said that.
Dan, you know that Jesse does not pay attention to me.
I'm not listening to you.
It is.
Him.
It is. I'll just. Nope. I'll. We got to get moving. So I'll just say what it is. It is.
I wanted to see if you were still listening.
It is a utility vehicle.
Well, I would have never gotten
that. Damn
it.
I was thinking that, yeah. And I was like, no, that's too easy.
Like what we might call like an
SUV.
An SUV or a four by four or a four-wheeler. Right. Or
that's
like that.
That's so shortened, though.
That's what the Australians are good at.
That's
they're good
what
at
they do.
Shortening words that they have previously lengthened with their long vowels.
But it's not just shortened. It's like extra shortened.
Yeah. They're an impressive people.
That's why I didn't say utility vehicle, okay. Because I was like, that's two words, and it's only a three-letter word. I was like, utility something?
They are a powerful nation for a reason.
I heard that.
They are efficient. They are efficient, although they do put a few extra syllables in the word no. That's not a criticism. No. It's an observation. Okay.
although that made me think about the syllable question. How many syllables are in the words graham cracker?
Graham. Oh, that's a good one.
Graham is
that's
one
a good one.
Syllable.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Graham cracker.
Graham cracker.
Because we are in the South.
Well, it's got an H between the two A's, so that means there's two
syllables.
Graham.
It's like the South versus like Mid-Atlantic.
No, but I'm saying by definition of a syllable, because there's an H between the two A's, syllables.
Graham or Graham.
No, it's irrelevant what dialect you have. By the spelling alone.
No, it's one syllable.
It's two syllables by spelling.
Jesse,
you're not listening to what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying.
Because you're not listening.
I'm trying.
Okay. Dan is arguing from a lexicographical standpoint, as in the structure of the word.
Okay.
Has
I'm
the two syllables
okay,
in the structure of the word. The
yes.
pronunciation, however, maybe is not always two syllables, but then that would be the aberration, is
by
what Dan is arguing.
By the definition of a syllable, by reading it, not out loud, but by looking at how the letters are placed next to each other, by definition, it would be two syllables.
Okay,
because there's
I dig
an A
it.
Preceding and post-seeding the H.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent job, everybody. We got through it.
Welcome.
We've got a couple other things, but we'll save
those.
That's not true. We'll save those for the beginning of the second break, so we can get some actual Star Trek discussion talk in.
I can't wait to hear Isaac's next voice hail for you guys on the definition of talking about his how he pronounces things.
Isaac suggested that we do a podcast something, because occasionally we'll do an episode of It's Not Star Trek. And there's been some discussion about maybe doing one on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 1990 movie. And in which case we'd have to have at least Isaac on as a guest to join us, and maybe a full roundtable of any other interested
total
parties.
Raphael fan.
Hey, and the rap song at the end got it wrong. They said Raphael was the leader of the group, transformed from the norm by the nuclear goop. But anyway, we'll save that discussion for that future podcast.
Yes. Don't want to waste. Yes,
gotta say. Kesprit 3. Three. A one.
The new print
friend. So then there's that other question. So kind of going back to when Dan was asking about Kesprit, the planet, there was three.
Oh, where's one and two?
Is planets.
The thing is I always, this has been discussed before in Star Trek fandom, of course, but the planets often have a number after them in Star Trek. Often the number three, because three is just the cool number that everyone digs.
Well, Earth is three.
But what's funny is that is using a convention, a naming convention, like an astronomical naming convention, where you name the planets after the star.
The primary.
But with numbers, right? Mm. But one wouldn't presume all these star systems would do that, because we didn't. We just called our planet Earth.
Yeah,
or variations on Earth.
And that's what we call it. It's like a colonial name.
It would be weird. I mean, you know how people talk about like, oh, what if we're the only life in the universe? It's like, well, probably not. But what if the weird thing about humans is we're the only ones that gave our planets different names? Like, there's lots of other life in the universe, but they all just are like in Star Trek. They're like, no, I come from like Gloop Glorp 7.
Well, I mean, it's easy to name like a handful of planets versus like a whole sky full of planets. Galaxy full of planets.
Yeah, I know, but people would name the planet in their solar system, right?
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Like,
but
before they start going around.
Maybe it's really hard to pronounce sometimes.
Okay, I don't know what that has to do with it. Anyway.
It doesn't.
I'm sure it's hard to pronounce.
Okay, so the premise of this episode, let's at least get that part done before we go to our first break. The premise of the episode is a super interesting one. It's where the Federation is considering permitting half of a planet or three quarters of a planet, one culture on a planet to join the Federation, while the other culture not only does not want to join the Federation, but is a bunch of isolationists, like
xenophobic.
Yeah, xenophobic. Yep.
In fact, both Picard and Morik called them xenophobic. They both used that word.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right. We made an excellent point there.
Oh no, I thought.
That was the question.
Yeah,
and Beverly even mentioned this, because she's all like, because he was concerned about only taking in, I think it was 2/3 of the planet.
Yeah,
instead
right.
of, you know, usually coming into the Federation, it's a unity of the planet that's why they're considering it. So that's where he was kind of hesitant. So that's what she made the question of. Well, what if Australia didn't join?
Which is not two-thirds of the plan.
To that two-thirds. But yeah. What if they didn't join? Would that disqualify us?
What I loved about that part.
Yeah, Dan's going to say exactly what I was going to say. I'll cede it to you, Dan, because I know you're going to make the exact same fucking point that I was going to make.
How they did the old trick of like, well, actually, that doesn't apply. And then they interrupt them before we get to find out why Picard, the Australian analogy is not a good one.
Picard is all trying to say that Beverly's analogy doesn't work. And I'm like, yes, it does. Maybe not 100%, but it totally works. What are you talking about?
I want to know what about that doesn't work, but they interrupt it, so we don't get to find out his point of view.
He was going
to
say some bullshit. He was trying to gaslight her.
Yeah.
He was like, well, the thing is, Beverly, you're wrong. Australia is stupid. They don't count.
So
they lengthen all their vowels and they shorten all their words. By the time the Federation was around, Australians just spoke with a bunch of beeps and bloops.
So I understand Picard's point of view of how ideally, yes, it should represent a unity among the planet. But on the other hand, if somebody doesn't want to contact the outside world, that shouldn't be holding the rest of the planet back. You shouldn't be forcing the planet to try to hey, majority, overtake this minority so you all think the same thing. Then we'll let you into the Federation. So I see both sides of the argument on that one.
And on that excellent point, we're going to take a break, Dan.
No way. Are we really?
Yeah. Look at the clock.
Oh, my God.
It's break time. So we will take a brief break and then...
we should get some sleep.
Dan, Jesse, and I... my name's Patrick, by the way. We will be back, and we will continue discussing this episode and some things unrelated to the episode. Then the episode again.
You better believe it.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. All right, we'll be right back.
Make sure you take all this junk with you.
Okay, we are back. We have returned from our break.
This is a bit of a jump.
But I got some Beverly juice.
Yeah, I was going to ask, at the end of this episode, what were they drinking? Was it brandy, ice wine, Moscato? What do you think
maybe
they were drinking?
Maybe it was Trident. It could be Dimetapp. Yeah, because they were... Picard and Beverly... We'll get to horny.
Were they using the same glass at the end of the episode as they were in Cause and Effect?
It looked similar to the Cause and Effect.
It looked like it. Yeah.
The Beverly's.
It's her favorite. Aperitif. It's her favorite little flute.
Yeah. Oh yeah, horny Picard. Yes. Horny Picard.
We're not at horny Picard part yet.
I know. But
for entertainment purposes, shouldn't we save Horny Picard for the end so the listeners keep listening? Because they're all like, I really want to know what Picard. Dan says about Horny Picard.
Okay, well, I'll go back to the original thing I was saying.
I got a lot to say about Horny Picard, so let's
I bet we all do. We'll save that for the third break.
Okay,
the third break can be all Horny Picard.
Earlier,
horny, sad, rejected Picard.
Oh, man.
In his sexy shirt.
Can we just get to the point, though, of Worf losing the captain and the chief medical officer?
And the look on his face where he's like, oh, shit, did I just kill the two most awesome people on the ship.
Worf made an amazing, horrified look.
I'm screwed. I'm screwed. He's what?
He also made a funny face when Morik led Riker into his mad scientist room with the sparkle ball and what looked like a cappuccino machine. And they left and Worf was making Worf was making like a rant.
Yeah, I know. He was just like, I don't know.
And he was also making a funny, the Klingon version of rolling your eyes when Morik kept shitting all over his security skills. anyways. I wanted to go back to what I was doing at the beginning, where there were some inconsistent pronunciations.
Inconsistent pronunciations.
Okay, so here you have Worf saying...
seems like something that should have a theme song.
Next time.
Inconsistent
pronunciations. This is Worf saying this word.
Okay. Enterprise to Kes, Security Relay Station 1.
Okay, Kes. Okay, here's Picard.
You mean the Kes?
He says Kes.
Kes.
He barely clear. If this was an episode of Kes or no Kes, that would be a Kes.
For sure.
He's like Kes. He has very clear enunciation.
With Kes.
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 With Kes.
Kes.
There was a lot of Kes last week because it was a Voyager episode.
Yeah.
Parturition, where Neelix is a piece of shit and Paris is a mildly better.
Yeah, that's the
Kes.
Kes.
That was from last week. Remember how Picard said
the Kes.
He said, remember how he said.
You mean the Kes.
Well, I already gave it away, he also says
the Kes. You mean the Kes. Yeah. The Kes. You mean the Kes.
That's shades of Shatner producing, Jesus fuck. fucking Christ. Pronouncing.
How did Beverly say it? Do you got any Beverly Kess? Yeah.
I don't have any Beverly Kess. I remember trying to pull one out, but it didn't sound good with the rest of, like, sometimes clips don't work either because there's too much background noise or they're too, like, crunched with the rest of everything.
Or is
else,
it because she's a woman and you're a misogynist?
No, I have a bunch of Beverly clips.
All right, touche.
I was gonna say, Crusher Convo podcast, you should have a bunch ready. No,
oh, I do. I have.
I totally understand what you're talking about, Dan. I totally get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but were there any other odd pronunciations?
I'm sorry.
Yes, it is. I'm beginning to think negatively.
She's just going
to
play all
so
his
much for that being a fluke.
Dan's like, I'm going to show you.
So Morik says it like this.
Our friends will escort them across the border into Kes.
So we're going to have to go with what Morik says. But speaking of Morik.
He's the local representative.
Speaking of Morik.
Yeah.
Okay, Dan.
I have the coordinates of Ambassador Morok's chambers.
Ah.
Ambassador Morok's chambers.
Oh, yeah? Is it Morok?
Morik is determined to take his protest to the Federation Council.
Or is it...
But I don't think he'll get very far.
Or is it Morik? Or...
Ambassador Morik.
Is it Morik?
Morik.
Three different ways.
Pronounced very differently.
Morok, Morik, and Morik.
It's a big ship.
Yeah.
I thought it was Morik.
Morik sounds reasonable, yeah.
It's spelled M-A-U-R-I-C.
Does he ever introduce himself?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then
he doesn't need to.
We may never know.
We may never know. And knowing is half the battle.
It is a big chunk of the battle. Here's a quick aside.
So we've lost half of the battle.
A quick aside from this episode is, I'm just going to sort of squeeze things in here since we took too long at the beginning, but just had a couple other things to go.
Oh, wait. Hold on before we move on.
All right.
The Kess are not half the planet. They're nearly 3/4 of it.
Beverly says Kess. But Morik says Kess.
There we go.
And she confirmed that it was 3/4 of the planet.
When she says Kess, can you play that again? Because is she like pouring something? Is she pouring something after? Like pouring liquid? What's going on here?
Breakfast.
No, she was peeling an apple.
Oh, peeling an apple.
The Kess are not half the planet. They're nearly 3/4 of it.
Sounds like she's pouring
apple. I think that's Captain Picard.
Picard is pouring something.
He's pouring some
coffee or tea. Picard. Coffee, he was pouring his tea.
Okay.
Yes.
That makes sense.
He was pouring his tea. She was cutting up her apple.
All right.
Yeah.
Coffee and croissant.
Yeah, it was funny
Coffee and croissant.
Well, he is French.
That's by the way a perfect breakfast for me as well. Coffee and a croissant.
Yeah. Fantastic.
You mean croissant.
All you need is a little
croissant.
It's McFadden knows French. French, so yeah. She was going to say it correctly.
And she lives in France much of the time.
She knows French.
She likes to go like there for like summer vacation. She knows stuff. She has a house there.
She knows French. She can dance. At least Beverly Crusher can dance.
Yeah.
And then isn't there something else Beverly Crusher can do?
Yeah.
She can crush it at dancing.
No, she can. She was a choreographer. She choreographed the labyrinth dancing.
Yeah.
Gates McFadden
can
ride a unicycle.
Whoa. Yeah.
Are you shitting me?
And that's not a metaphor. No, that's like a for real thing.
That's a for real thing. There's actually, when she was on the Joan Rivers show, she actually entered the stage on the unicycle, not knowing that she was pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
Wow, she's got multiple talents.
Yes, she does.
Dude.
She has multiple talents.
Dan also has multiple talents. One of them is mentioning or remembering last week, Dan remembered.
She's a factotum.
He remembered an old TV movie. In which a child did not know his last name. He knew his first name.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But he didn't know his last name because he'd been kidnapped.
Yeah.
This child had been kidnapped, and then...
And he couldn't get home because he didn't know his phone number or his last name, so he couldn't...
Did he escape his kidnappers but couldn't say where he was or nobody knew who he was?
It's like an 80s movie.
I don't remember all the things that happened. All I know is that one of the points of the thing was that, like, he couldn't... If he got to a phone, he couldn't like use it to call home because he didn't know his last name, so he couldn't look it up in the phone book. And plus, he didn't know his phone number, and so all that shit.
Well,
aided in him not being able to get home.
I bring it up because Dan thought you at the time you thought it was the name of the movie was I Know My Name Is Michael.
Yeah,
but we got a correction on YouTube on a YouTube comment from @HarryPothead. 42024. Wait, no.
42-0?
@HarryPothead. 40. No.
What do you mean?
HarryPothead 42024. You can see how that's a little complicated.
Yay. 42024.
And it doesn't help that next to it, it says this comment was posted 4 days ago. And he says, I know my name is Steven. The real kid in the story had a brother who grew up to be a serial killer.
Yeah, which is crazy.
So that was the name. It wasn't, I know my name is Michael, but Dan was close, but it was, I know my name is Steven.
And I'm, first of all, I'm...
And Dan insists he's not Steven, because when Dan brought this up, I thought, are you the kid that was kidnapped? Are you sure this was a movie and not your own life? But Dan said he was not Steven, but could you be Steven's brother, the serial killer?
No.
Okay.
I was absolutely shocked that Harry Pothead...
4/20/24.
That somebody actually knew
it's 4/20/24. Okay, I get it.
Yes.
Harry Pothead, 4/20.
Anyways...
But it's also 2024.
Okay, yes.
I just want to call out that it's clever.
Yeah, it is. I thought it was assumed. I didn't know you didn't get it.
I'm stupid.
Okay. Well, I just want to say I was shocked that like somebody actually knew what the fuck I was talking about. I didn't think anybody remembered that. And actually, when I looked it up, I think the title might actually be I Know My First Name is Steven. I think that's the actual title. Point being is
that's a much more clunky title than I Know My Name is Steven.
I know. Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay.
Right.
That aside has been concluded. One other aside. When I was editing the podcast last week, I made a comment. I remember hearing a comment that I realized maybe misinterpreted, because I was making a negative comment towards insecure men.
I'm beginning to think negatively, Jean-Luc.
And I wanted to make sure people didn't think I meant like men with insecurities. We all have insecurities. Many of us have crippling insecurities. Mm-hmm. That was not my critique. In the context of the episode, Neelix was being a piece of shit from a toxic masculinity insecurity sense, yes, where he was being controlling of Kes, and he was getting angry because he thought she didn't love him or something because she looked at Tom Paris or whatever. That's what I was referring to. I just
know exactly what
specify.
I mean.
We are nothing wrong with insecurities. It's only a problem if your insecurities are based on some bullshit that make you act like a complete asshole. Mm-hmm.
That Neelix and Kes stuff was
problematic.
Special.
Yes.
Special.
Exactly. Especially early on. And in that episode,
we
discussed it, but the producers were like, this is getting weird, so we got to like try to figure this out.
It was a strange sensation.
But in this episode, in Attached, we get the opposite, because we have two people who are able to have a relatively mature, if even at times playful and fun, discussion about their feelings for each other. Mm-hmm. All brought
There's
about
a reason why this episode is my favorite.
Yeah,
so
it's all brought about by that sci-fi conceit of their brains are linked because they were going to be interrogated. And I love when you have a MacGuffin that makes total sense in the plot. You know, everything was structured well, as you were saying earlier, Dan. This is such a well-written episode.
Like I said, the whole Kesprit thing could have lived on its own, but they had this plot going on, and it didn't seem excessive. They worked with each other. I thought it went really well together.
Yeah, and the idea that they want to steal their brainwave patterns, and a goofy side effect of that is that Beverly and Picard would slowly start to be able to read each other's thoughts. That's just amazing.
And then
you get to examine the result of that.
And then a convenient plot device is they can't get away from each other, or else they start feeling sick.
And Picard, I have a freeze frame that's hilarious of Picard, because Beverly is looking like she's clasping her stomach, and she looks a little nauseous, and she looks ill and upset. Picard is just like, ooh! Jerry Lewis
Someone punched him in the gut or something.
It's hilarious.
Yeah,
I think the biggest I think the biggest thing about this plot of why the A and the B work so well is because the whole theme of it is communication.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The biggest issue that the Kesprit had is that they never communicated with each other. Even when Troy was all like, when's the last time you talked to the Prit? And he's like, over 100 years. She's like, they probably changed. No, they didn't. And he refused to talk to them because he just assumed how they were. And of course, the Prit completely made up this whole exaggeration of what the Kes was doing. And it was this whole... So they were basically hating each other off of assumption because they'd never communicated.
Yeah.
Then we have the B plot, which I guess is kind of more A than B.
It's hard to tell. They're kind of living
together.
It's
hard to tell.
Yeah. They're sort of evenly spaced out.
But because Picard and Beverly always kept their feelings hidden and they never communicated about it, how they were forced to communicate in this case, which is brilliant in the sense because you kind of see how they bounce off of each other so well. So even though they were hearing each other's thoughts and stuff like that, he automatically would have a reaction and she would start laughing and be like, yeah, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist, you know? And it was just perfect. It was because they knew each other for so long. It was almost like they were just having a silent communication because they always knew each other. And this was a highlight to kind of like showcase them. Like, this is someone that I'm very close to and I don't know why I keep pushing them away.
And it mirrors the relationship in some sense in between the actors, because they obviously just know each other so well that they were able to act out these scenes in a very believable and convincing way that was not cheesy, because you could see it could be done in a cheesy fashion, but especially at the end, right before they get disconnected, when they're walking down the hallway with Riker.
All three
of them are doing such a wonderful job. Riker's frustration at being like kept out of the joke, like
confused,
and they're just doing such a good job of their little playful giggling mental contact.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And the thing is that Patrick and Gates just had an instant chemistry with each other that we automatically saw in the first season, and they were able to play around with that. When we discussed this yesterday, Patrick, I had mentioned to you on Cause and Effect, when Brennan Braga had wrote that scene where she was in his ready room and he was giving him his Aunt Adele's, you know, hot toddy. It's a very cutesy scene, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of flirtatious. They're just being cute and stuff like that. But Brennan Braga's like, I didn't write it like this. This is just how the actors did it.
Yeah.
So he's like, so it came out a little different than I thought.
Better.
But it was perfect. It was better, right, than what he had written, because they just knew how to elevate the scene, especially. And so that's why Attached is so special to me. It's my favorite episode of TNG. And this is why, because it showcases them perfectly. But I will have to say real fast, RIP to the action jacket.
Oh, yeah. This was the last episode
Picard
that it shows
takes
in.
It off and puts it down. And the horrible effects of that fireball. Like, that was so stupid.
That fireball was amazing. You could tell, like, it was pyrotechnics, and they just kind of covered up, like, the expeller or whatever that uses to shoot the flame out.
Yeah.
And it ends up just coming out.
Oh, man.
It ends up coming out of, like, just no, there's no hole or anything in the ground. It just sort of goes through the ground. And then when Beverly says, when Beverly says something and Picard's like, what did you say? She's like, I didn't say anything. You can see her lips move when she says, I got to find the line that I'm talking about.
Was this before or after they went into the fire swamp?
This was right before. Oh, it goes, Picard says, can we get through it? And then Crusher thinks, she looks like she says, I think so. You see her lips move. And then Picard goes, what did you say? And then she says, I didn't say anything. So you see her lips move.
Yeah.
That's no big deal.
I didn't notice that.
But I
think you have a bigger TV than I do, Dan.
I don't know. Maybe.
And you watch it with captions.
I do watch it with captions.
I did too. Yeah. So I saw that
too.
Part.
Yeah.
So
everybody else does it. I don't watch it with captions for whatever reason.
I watch it the second viewing through. You know, Patrick, your TV is like the same size as my TV.
I don't know. But anyways, look, there's only one way we can figure that out. One or both of us, how about this? We each have to take our TVs off the wall and bring them to a neutral location, and we can
put
the TVs and have Jesse make the measurements, and
I have two different
he'll determine.
Measures.
Yeah, because Jesse we can put the TVs face to face together like they're kissing.
It was very intimate.
Exactly, and then Jesse can determine which one is bigger.
Okay, on the point about communication, I want to go back to the...
What was I talking about, toxic masculinity?
No, when Jesse was talking about how...
Mine's bigger!
How the Kesprit weren't communicating with each other. There was also...
You're talking about guest Jesse or regular Jesse?
Guest Jesse.
Okay, I'm just confirming.
Okay, so there was... When Morik was trying to communicate, when Morik was trying to bust Picard and Beverly Crusher out of the prison or whatever, like, he did not even communicate that to Riker or anyone. They just did it, you know.
Yeah.
And so, like, and he just it was kind of like fucked up, because he didn't trust their security, and to the point where like Worf was getting really pissed off.
Yeah,
but like, you'd think that like, if he didn't trust that they would have a good enough security to handle his business, like, he should understand what it's like to want to like be reassured about what's happening. So he should have looked at it from Riker's perspective, being like, this is my captain. If anyone's going to give a shit about Picard more than anyone, it's me. And so like, the fact that they didn't even communicate the fact that they broke him out of jail was just another example of this guy being paranoid about doing anything. But
and a lack of empathy too, which I think makes sense. A lack of empathy probably is a fairly common thing to go along with a lack of communication or a disinterest in communication, because you can't imagine the other person as having a mind,
right?
You know, you just couldn't care less. You're like, they're not even people,
right? And on the subject of Crusher and Picard, it was interesting the communication aspect at the end when Beverly was like, you know, don't push it away. I heard you, you know, I didn't know you felt that way. And Picard says, didn't you?
When they're around the campfire?
Yeah, yeah. And Crusher.
But before they sleep perpendicular to the campfire for some reason, which is not a particularly efficient way to retain the heat in the night. I'm just trying to get the timing right.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, all right.
When Crusher says, that's why you didn't want me on the Enterprise 7 years ago. And then Picard says, I didn't know how I would react. And then little by little, I realized that I didn't have those feelings anymore. 20 years, after all, is a long time. Now, that is a lie. He's lying to her and himself.
He's lying to her face.
And himself. Because she wouldn't have been able to detect that if his feelings were gone. She wouldn't have been able to detect those feelings he had if they were gone. And on top of that, then when she says the part where and now we're friends, it almost seemed like she was forcing it too, because he was especially forcing it, because when he laid down, they played the super longing music that went on for a minute.
and she looked all comfy and he looked very awkward.
Go ahead, Dan. Oh, sorry. And at the end, there was even kind of a connection too, and Beverly felt it too. So they both definitely felt something, maybe Picard a little bit more than her, but him saying that, I don't feel that way anymore. And her buying it, she probably was lying to him when she said she was pretending to buy it, you know, because they both can read each other. Yeah. They can both read each other's mind. So she knows he's lying, but then she's pretending she believes him anyways.
The thing is that he went back to his old ways of just trying to push down his feelings and lying to her just like he always does. But he wasn't really paying attention to the fact that she could sense that he was pushing that back. That's why she kind of looked around and she's like, well, then we're friends.
Yeah.
And he's all like, yes, friends. And she's like, okay, I'm going to sleep. There was different versions of this, because this was a fan submitted script.
Oh, really?
By a 23-year-old. Yeah. And he wanted to really highlight that relationship, but of course they wanted to keep Picard single. So in the very first draft, they were actually supposed to make love around that campfire scene, but they're too soon.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon. But then in the script.
And too uncomfortable, by the way. That did not look like a nice camp.
Whoa. You have the official script.
That's so awesome. Look at that.
Yeah.
For the audience at home, Jesse has a proper, real script.
Yes.
Renee Echeverria? I don't know if that's pronounced properly or not.
This is his script that I got. So I have this one in Cause and Effect. And it actually said at the very end, and I was actually trying to find the part.
They fuck.
instead of just laying down, what they do is they cuddle. That was in the final script.
So he, like a spooning type thing.
He put his arm out and she nestled her head on his shoulder. And that's how they went to sleep, which I thought would have been nice, but I guess they felt it didn't work because he just lied to her. So it'd be kind of weird to be like, but come here and hug me, right? Yeah.
They kind of made up for not doing that by the part at the end where they, kissed for a second. Even though she kind of cut it off, it was still, you could tell she admitted that there was some feelings going on.
Yeah. I think
I'm kind of glad they didn't cuddle, actually.
Well, I think, and especially the way you've described the script, Jesse, is you can see how that's the audience pleasing version. But also that classic thing as a writer, the advice they say, don't try to please the audience, because that doesn't necessarily serve the story or the characters. And this relationship is complicated. It's not an easy relationship. And by the way, I think it's good for us not to sort of just gloss over the fact that Picard was in a position of power and attempted to deny Beverly a prominent career move onto the flagship of the Enterprise because he's a dude who was sad that he was like, I might get horny around this gal. And that's, and
I don't want to deal with my feelings.
Are we talking about horny Picard now?
No. not yet. Not this episode, Horny Picard. We're talking about conceptual Horny Picard.
Conceptual.
Because as a can you imagine
counter at far point.
What it is the classic example of a seemingly progressive male thinking, you know what? I don't want to sexually abuse this woman, so I'm not going to hire her. thinking that's he's a great guy for doing that, being like, I'm going to pat myself on the back because you know what I did today at work? I didn't hire a woman I thought I might incidentally harass. So isn't it great that she now does not have this option to create? Now, in the end, Picard did hire her, and we know Picard's a good guy and all that. But I think this is an example of stuff that creeps in from the culture of the writers, even the well-intentioned mm-hmm. writers, in this era. I think you would see less of this in modern Star Trek, because I think the writers would catch that ahead of time, being like, you know what, we're kind of making Picard look like a complete jerk by implying that he considered mm-hmm. denying a person a huge career.
Well, the
career
way he said it to her in Encounter was, if you decide to leave, I will understand yes. and approve it. So yes. he was trying to turn it around and make it like, now it's your decision, yeah. but you have my, you know, support. And she is like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not being unreasonable. I don't know what you're talking
about. Because she was already hired yeah. and was on the ship.
It was kind of a weird thing. That was also a weird thing to say.
He was trying to egg her on to like, you can leave if you want. Why? Like yeah. she was just like,
it's a little, I don't know if gaslighting is the correct term, but it's definitely a little manipulative.
It's close to it.
Yeah.
Well, yes. it seemed like,
yes. it's like, it's your choice to get the fuck out of here. You're creeping me out.
Well, there was also one part where it appeared like he was kind of like mansplaining escape to her. He says, the important thing during any confinement is to think positively and not give up hope. There's a way out of every box. There's a solution to every puzzle. It's just a matter of finding it. So it
was she's looking at him like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, right.
That whole jail cell scene was hilarious because she was just knocking him over, just being sarcastic and being like, what the hell are you talking about?
I'm beginning to realize that you always seem to have some acerbic remark on the tip of your tongue.
That's right.
Sure does. And she was pointing this out, but even when she got the food and he's like, mm-hmm. I think we're going to be here for a while. She's like, I'm starting to think negatively, Jean-Luc. You know, she's just like, come on, man. Like, I know you're trying to be positive, but we're in a shitty situation. Yeah. How the hell are we going to get out of here?
And
they're realistic.
They're pulling together all this great character stuff. And it's a lot of character development in a single episode. But part of why it works is because it's character development that's building off of the relationship that's been developing over the 7 years of the show. And little facts that we hear, you know, now and then. We have an understanding of Picard's attraction to Beverly. And there's hints of it, and some are more overt and some are less overt.
She looked really sheepish when he found out she was scared of heights.
She mentions that in Chain of Command, I believe. So
Chain of Command.
Yeah,
so that was a nice touch. Well, yeah.
When I thought it was a little silly that Picard, when he... this part.
Damn.
When he like got all pissed off because he was going to try to run to the exit of the door before it closed. Remember, because the soldier came in with their quote-unquote... Yeah, because what did he think? He thinks like the soldier would like just casually let him through the door. And let's say Picard managed to reach the door before it closed. That soldier would just be waiting right there with a phaser. I didn't quite...
Or the door would just cut him in half.
Yeah, right. He really had no chance. He said,
it's not going to automatically open.
He said, damn, as if he thought he really had a chance of escaping. But I don't know. You were talking about like
Picard has weird moments.
You're talking about how they had those moments where they were having sort of off audio conversations.
Off audio.
I don't know what it's not quite off camera.
Psychic conversation.
Psychic conversation.
Psychic conversation.
Telepathic,
yeah.
I guess. So is the more scientific.
I guess.
Version,
yeah. That, sort okay. of. There were three instances of those. There was
not responding to non-spoken thoughts.
Yeah.
It's a good gag.
Beverly going, how can they really get to someone's thinking if the minds keep churning up all this flotsam to the surface? And then she goes, that's not funny. And like, I wanted to know what he said.
I know. We'll never get to know. He thought some naughtiness.
By the way, flotsam. They use that word also. Well, in Q, use that word flotsam. They like the word flotsam.
I like to do that, but
they also like the word flimflam.
Yeah, but flotsam usually is paired with jetsam. You know, flotsam and jetsam. Yep. But we usually don't hear the jetsam on Star Trek. It's all about the flotsam. No.
Bob's your uncle and Bill's your father or whatever.
No. That was in Picard season three.
The second time,
it was Bob's your uncle and Sally's your aunt, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, I think that's right.
Picard Jr.
Yeah.
Then the second time they did this, Picard says, no, but there are times when it is necessary for a captain to give the appearance of confidence. And then she goes, I'm sorry. I just couldn't resist. What did she say? I want to know. And then the third time, of course, is the Riker one where Beverly and Picard, Beverly and Jean-Luc both have a discussion.
She said something funny.
Yeah, at the expense of Riker, obviously. Yeah. So because Riker... Yeah. What was it that Riker said?
They're probably like, get a load of this giant Alaskan behind us.
Well, he was talking about how they weren't going to make it to the Federation, Kesprit, because of what they did. And he was all like, yeah, Picard was agreed. And then all of a sudden she starts smiling and looks at him. And then he looks at her and he's like, ha ha ha. He's like, you're right. And then that's when Riker was like, what the heck are you guys talking about?
Did I miss something?
Yeah, this is what he said. Prior to it, he says,
Borik is determined to take his protest to the Federation Council, but I don't think he'll get very far.
Yeah, and that's when they start laughing at him. They go,
yep.
Of course. Of course. you're absolutely right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All right, we're about due for a break, but when we come back, we will talk at length about Horny Picard.
Oh, boy!
We'll talk at length about, well, maybe not at length, we'll talk about Riker being all extra Captain-y Riker.
Awesome Riker.
Awesome Riker in the seventh season. Given a lot to do, and catch up on any odds and
ends,
bits and bobs, and all that other stuff. So that and more to look forward to when we return from the break. Be right back.
We should get some sleep.
Okay, Dan's ready because Dan wants me to start it up because so I'll push the button because I can see his finger is poised over something. So I will go ahead and make it official by saying, we're back.
The question is why?
Okay. I get it. That's a good one.
Let me see. We shall see.
Okay.
Let me see. We shall see.
That would be me.
We are back, indeed, from
our... Let me see. Break. We shall see.
That would be me.
As promised, we will...
I made a little Beverly poem. Did you hear that? Well, that one of them was Lauren, actually.
We will. Was Oh, Lauren, the... was that the name of the other...
From Prit.
Yeah, check Prit it out. Person?
Yeah.
Let me see. We shall see. That would be me.
All right. That was good, Dan. I like that. it's not a haiku, though, is it?
No.
That'd be pretty impressive if you could make some.
You should have done one of attached. Like, I would have been curious of like a country song between.
Yeah.
Wait, are you saying we should do a haiku of attached or an AI generated song of attached?
No, a haiku of attached.
Well, I didn't even know. I could start doing haikus for every episode.
I think you should do a full sonnet for every episode. God. You can read it at the end.
Oh, God. But you know what? But the AI song, yes. So here's my request for the next episode. If you guys can do this, I would love to hear a song about Beverly and Picard from this whole attached episode in a alternate rock love song.
Okay. Alternate rock.
Alternative rock.
Love song.
Ballad.
Yes, like a rock ballad. Like what is that? Would it be like a sort of like a Guns N' Roses type thing, or is that not alternative?
Like Nickelback.
Nickelback.
Like Nickelback.
Can you guys do Nickelback?
Like that feel.
The AI might not be able. The AI might refuse to do Nickelback. No.
There's nothing.
I heard that.
Just like Deadpool, they are wise.
I want my Nickelback. I went to one of their shows, and I want my Nickelback. Get it?
Yeah. You gave him a nickel, and then you want it back.
I'm just teasing. I'm fooling around.
Is not funny.
Horny Picard. We're gonna get to Horny Picard in a second. But first, Dan wanted to mention something. I'm under the impression that Dan has a comment.
The lesser known characters of this episode. Troy had four lines in this episode. Mm-hmm. She says, our primary concern is not to assign blame, but to recover our missing officers. Then she said, surely you must have some means of communication in case of a planetary emergency. Then she said, how long has it been since your last diplomatic contact? Then she said, then it's possible they may have changed over the years.
Okay.
Real
quick, Dan, when you started that, I thought Troy was only going to have like one line.
I said four lines.
I know.
Oh, but
I mean,
you didn't realize I was going to go four times as long as that.
I'm just saying the implication when you started was like, she barely said a thing, but said a few important things.
But it was like
literally one scene.
But it was one scene.
It was one scene.
Four lines, one scene.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any Geordi.
Data,
at all. Data had a few more lines than Troy, but not by many.
And I don't even remember Data's lines at all.
There's something about something happening with something else.
I mean, clearly not enough. Oh, for you yeah, to write
they were. Oh yeah, Data was trying to. They were trying to find a communication. Communicate with the
the
Prit.
That's right.
And then when Data was like, Riker got some kind of like sly Riker smile when
he got it a few times.
Data found their secret comm channel, and Data's like, "Our hail may come as quite a surprise to them." And Riker gave like a mischievous big smile, like he loves the fact that they like broke into their shit.
This is when he had mentioned he was all like, "Oh, he says they're not very friendly," and Data's like, "No, sir."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he was just affirming it.
He's like, "I love but fucking I loved, with xenophobes."
Yes, I loved though. This is with Tracy.
Cuoco?
DeCoco? Yeah.
Cuoco?
Where she, Lieutenant Jay.
Yes.
And she just kind of, well, he's making those commas. She just kind of looks over at him and just kind of smirks. And then she's even like kind of looking, which he's talking to the Prit. And she was like, "What the hell are we doing with it right now?" But I loved her facial expressions.
Oh, she's always
facial
great.
Expressions.
Yeah, it's always wonderful that they had these recurring extras.
Who
gave a real continuity to the or continuity.
Continuity. Whatever you want to say, it can be pronounced either way. Actually, and speaking of extras, who I think she qualifies as a little bit more than an extra, but Nurse Ogawa made an off-screen appearance because apparently the implication was she's been late to work 15 minutes because her and Ensign Markson are getting it on.
Because this is a very horny episode.
Speaking of horny.
Yes.
Extra
which
horny episode.
In a few episodes later, what was it? Genesis was 18?
Yeah, 10 episodes so from
about
now.
About 10 episodes
like
later, she's pregnant. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, you think it's Ensign Markson?
Yeah. I mean, presumably.
Yeah. Well,
but you never
said
know.
Andrew? There was always a confusion with the names. They never was consistent.
Yeah, maybe they weren't consistent.
But I think it was the same guy.
Yeah. But the good observation, Dan, is this: there was another example of horniness in this episode. And there was even though they
and
hated
gossip.
Each other, like Morik and Lauren, when they're all fighting, I know they're fighting and it's about miscommunication.
Master Morok's chambers.
But it really kind of, it was almost being played like a 1980s, like primetime, you know, romantic, you know, the two people who hate each other, who fall in love kind of thing. It was almost like if they had continued the storyline, those two are totally getting together and getting married.
Right.
And that's how the community, the planet result eventually gets into the Federation because they fall in love, even though they hate each other. Mm. Dan is less impressed with this potential theory.
I think of Sci-Fi Remnant set, because I actually did Attached on their show just last week.
Yeah.
They said Moonlighting? Is that
Yes, Moonlighting. That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, Moonlighting.
Yes,
that makes sense.
That's the Moonlighting effect is what he was calling it. So.
Was that Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd?
Yes.
Sybil Shepherd. Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd were all fighting with each other on Moonlighting.
Coffee and croissant. Yeah.
Kes Prit 3.
The new Prit friends.
Kes Prit 3.
The new Prit friends.
Okay, we do need to get to Horny Picard, but okay. I did want to comment just briefly on how this episode is an example that they do, I think, repeatedly in season 7 of putting Riker in really more of a leadership position.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Because Riker traditionally, he's the very good first officer, but a first officer's duties and the way they do things is intentionally different than the captain. They have a different role. You know, he's making all the schedules and keeping track of all the crew. That's his kind of primary responsibility. And they have him doing more of the solo diplomatic stuff. And to me, it just was sort of showing the growth of Riker at this stage, where he came on as this first officer, all brash and young and beardless, and now he's really taking charge in dealing with a fairly
Babyface
complicated situation,
well,
diplomatic situation.
Well, yeah, in this episode, he's basically having to take shit from both the Kes and the Prit, but by the end, he like gets some good. With the Kes, he's all like...
They will also listen to the reports of the captain of the Enterprise and his first officer. And I can tell you right now, the first officer's report will go something like this.
Yes, he's about to start a jazz song.
And then he had to talk to Lauren from the Prit, and that went like...
They're still charged with spying, Commander. I have heard nothing here which would alter that.
Then maybe
well,
you should consider this.
That was a bold move on Riker, because he went and basically kidnapped that Prit girl and put her in there, and he's like, and here you go. He like force them to communicate. But he was very bold, or just like, oh, she's not going to listen to me. Okay, just bring her up, transport her over. Well, compare
this to, and I know it's a different setup, it's a different story and totally different tone and everything. But if you compare it to the previous time that Picard was kidnapped, and actually Beverly for a time was in trouble, was in Chain of Command. And in that case, Riker doesn't get to be in charge. They bring a whole new captain in, and he's kind of dealing with this whole, how do I adjust to this new captain business? And obviously, like I said, there's a different story, but that's not here. Here we have a fully confident in charge Riker.
Well, what he said to the Prit, he essentially said to them, he's like, okay, maybe you think we're spying on you, but we can overpower you like a motherfucker. Yeah. Basically, that was his response to them.
Yeah.
I mean, it was clever because they were like, it's like, oh, you captured our captain because you thought we were spying on you? Well, if you didn't want to be watched, we can really watch you. But like I said, that basically amounted to him saying, like, we can overpower you. You know? So it was kind of like a brute force threat, but done in a clever way.
Well, and that's his style. He likes to wave it around a little bit. Mm-hmm. all right. So, Horny Picard.
So the Horny Picard part actually really starts when she sacrifices herself at the border.
Yes, agreed. She pushes.
Why didn't you ever tell me you were in love with me?
Pushes him through the hole.
I would like to read the script here, if you don't mind. I would, because I found this interesting a little bit. So it says that Beverly glances over her shoulder and then makes a lightning decision. She suddenly pushes him through the distortion. Picard falls to the other side of the border. The distortion now fluctuates wildly after his passage. Beverly can't get through. Picard jumps to his feet and looks back at Beverly in horror as the troopers rush in. Mm-hmm. They've got her. Picard and Beverly silently look at each other from opposite sides of the border, unheard thoughts rushing back and forth. The troopers keep their weapons trained on Beverly, but they don't fire. One trooper activates his communicator. Now, you do see them look at each other, and I feel like this is the kind of the moment where he's like, oh shit, I just lied to her at the campfire. I said I don't have my feelings. She just sacrificed herself to save me. Now she's probably going to die because of it. I really do love her, and I fucked up.
Yeah.
Okay, which I think is what pushes through what happens at the end here.
That makes sense, because I hadn't fully made that connection, because I knew that he was clearly upset when, she was, at least it appeared, sacrificing herself to these people.
Yeah, she got captured.
Well, at the campfire, he was saying, you were married to my best friend. At first, I thought it was harmless infatuation, something hormonal rather than emotional.
And I like how he said hormonal.
Hormonal means horny in that situation first. That means just straight horniness.
Picard is open about his horniness then, and he's open about it at the end of the episode, where he's just straight up...
when he's like, wait, when he goes...
Man cannot be held responsible for what his mind does while he's asleep.
Because she's like, and I saw your dreams.
That's another thing. That's another thing.
She saw his dreams.
What did she hear?
Yeah.
She saw sex his dreams.
Sex
dreams.
So she's all like, you fucker, you lied to me. So clearly you're not ready.
Yeah.
Right?
100%. 100%. And it's a brilliant way to transition through, throughout the episode, this little arc as it goes, and right into that scene where Picard has not realized what the situation is, because even though they were tied together and communicating psychically, and now they're together and having this nice little whatever, horny Picard is kind of taken over, where he's just like, okay, I'm into this. And I think you're right, Jesse, that he probably was motivated to do it because he was like, I almost lost her. I don't want to lose her. I should take my shot.
I should take my chance.
You know, speaking of like Beverly pushing him through the hole and then them being separated by those soldiers. Yeah. Like, this is another example of like how Morik is an asshole, because like I said earlier, like I was pointing out earlier, like he was like, don't worry, we broke him out of jail. We got it all under control. We didn't tell you we were going to do it. Yeah. We're just telling you now. Well, apparently they didn't have anything under control, because first they come across one soldier that's sort of looking around for him. Then two soldiers appear. And then finally four soldiers appear. So Morik's great plan to like break him out of prison didn't work at all. So like, he's not as secure and awesome and like as he thinks he is. And he should have fucking told Riker what he was doing. Anyway,
no, I agree.
He's incompetent.
Well,
I mean, and it's okay to fuck up, but like, that's why you loop other people in.
Yeah, well, and that's, I mean, of course, the point of the episode is that these people are terrible people.
Yeah,
we're terrible people. The thing is, though, is that when it comes down to, so they have the little fun thing with Riker as they're going into the ship, they get their devices removed, and then they have this intimate dinner, right? Yeah. She's dressed up to the nines.
And so is he.
Very elegant, okay? and he gave her amazing dinner, and they're having this conversation. What was interesting is when she brought up the dreams, and that's why he's like, a man can't be held responsible for what he does in his sleep. She was saying, she's like, well, it was very intimate, and he nods and he looks down, and she says, Beverly nods. She gives him a look full of sexual innuendo.
Whoa.
So she was like, but you see that because when she's talking about it, she's all like, what about when you're awake?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
She's being very flirty. But then when he flips it on her, then she's like, oh shit, now we're being serious. Okay. Yeah. I got to take a step back, because they always were playful. They were always cute to each other. Mm-hmm. She didn't really think that he had changed his mind. They no longer were connected, but when he's like, let's give it a chance, let's not be afraid. She's like, we probably should be afraid because clearly if you're going to lie to me while we're attached with these devices, you still aren't being open fully with your feelings towards me.
So there was the point. Okay, so there was the whole thing with her creating that fancy Vulcan breakfast. And when she brought that up, Picard gave this look like I don't think I've ever seen him give at the beginning. It was this kind of like almost like sarcastic, like, well, that's fancy, like kind of look at the beginning.
Right.
But then like later on, like when she's like, she goes,
you hate having breakfast with me.
And he's like, and he's like, and he's like, and he's like,
that's not true.
That was a point where like it's, their feelings came out, and it's the honesty was good, because they discovered neither of them really liked that. But then when they discovered they had feelings for each other, was that a good thing for them to like get out in the open? I guess it was, because by the time All Good Things roll around. Good Things rolls around. They had been married or whatever. So
And then divorced.
So, but I mean, is that the kind of thing you want to come out during a mind reading, like forced mind reading session? You know.
Well, I think that's what made it bad, because they were forced to it. They didn't get to do it naturally. They weren't ready, and that's why she says we should be afraid. Now, I think that the fact that Sub Rosa comes six episodes after this is very important, because Beverly, she made the decision to leave. She did it to protect herself. Okay. She didn't want to get hurt, because she wasn't sure. Like if they tried, they might have broken up. Mm-hmm. Right. And she didn't want that to happen. She wanted what they had to stay intact. So when Sub Rosa happens, she's kind of vulnerable, which is why she was vulnerable to Ronan's manipulation and his lies and stuff, because she was lonely. But it was Picard that came in and rescued, like saved her, right? I think that was the tipping point of how the relationship, because if you start seeing episodes after that, there are some scenes of them together that are cutesy, kind of flirty.
Yeah.
Like their relationship definitely starts to grow. So that's why when you get to All Good Things and she decides to make that attempt of, she kissed him in the ready room. She was letting him know, let's not be afraid.
Yeah. And, you had mentioned that part of the reason why she may have rejected his advances, which I think was a really interesting way to go, because I think, again, the audience pleasing way is to get them together. It's the last season. Let's just get them together. They have fun. It's way more interesting to not do that. Mm-hmm. And even more interesting to not make it explicit why she necessarily rejected it, to allow the audience to sort of figure it out from what they saw in the story and what they know of their relationship and just what they know of humanity. Is like, do you want to date your boss? Your dead husband's
best friend
who ordered your husband to his death. However, there is an alternate thing, because they did make a big point about Beverly seeing his dreams. And I was thinking maybe she was into it until she saw the dreams.
Yeah.
And then she's like, you know what? Maybe not.
Man cannot be held responsible for what his mind does while he's asleep.
Maybe he wasn't that creative in his dreams, is what I'm getting.
Now that I'm looking,
I'm suggesting that maybe Picard is a lazy lover. Good archaeologist. Possibly a lazy lover.
Now that I'm looking at it, I noticed that Picard actually explicitly contradicts himself when he said earlier about little by little the feelings went away, now we're friends. Yeah. He straight up says at the end, now that we know how each of us feels, perhaps we should not be afraid to explore those feelings. So that he's like, it's not even you have to read his mind to like, even though you by reading his mind, you could find out he's lying. Yeah. He straight up contradicts what he says. I don't know if that was like a mistake or what.
No, it was a mistake. He was contradicting himself.
Yeah.
Because he's a
he
man.
He was, because he doesn't really, yeah, I wasn't going to say it. But you know what was good, though, is that even when she says we should be afraid, he just quietly accepts it because he knew she was right.
Yeah. But at the end.
And he gave her a kiss on the lips, like a very tender kiss of like, okay.
The way they filmed it was very interesting because there's that whole part between her saying, you know what, maybe not. And he's like, okay, cool. They have this little tender moment. He opens the door for her to let her out, which I suppose is polite. It comes off a little kidnappy to be like, I've unlocked the door. but then, you know, he goes to the window and he has a series of micro looks. It's sort of his facial expression changes a little bit. And I read it as kind of a combination of sadness and frustration. And I mean, a little bit of sexual frustration there and confusion in that he seemed positive that this was going to happen. I think that was what we were in part seeing, that he kind of wasn't sure how to react in the moment because he didn't know exactly how to feel because he kind of expected I thought this was going to happen. And I think, again, that demonstrates that he wasn't really fully engaged and paying attention to what was going on. Because if he were, then he would have, I think, caught some more signals from Beverly.
Right.
Then I heard that.
Well, he ought to have. He ought to have heard that.
Captain Picard and Dr. Crusher.
Yeah, he was kind of jumping the gun a little bit. He was going off of his feelings of fear, almost losing Beverly, instead of really taking the time of, am I ready? Should I even put her through this?
Yeah.
So,
but,
and she made the decision for them.
Yeah.
So,
and in the end, you know, it, like you said, they continue this story. And it continues to play out, which is why it's nice that they didn't sort of accelerate it here and just give us the quote unquote happy ending. This is the much more more sensible and interesting ending.
I like that. It was off topic a little. I like that Beverly mouthed off a lot as a kid.
Yeah,
she was always a real smart ass.
Yeah, great character moment.
Okay, can we just talk 2 seconds about what was it? Hold on, Tom.
Yeah, something.
Morris. Tom Morris.
Who she made
Norris?
Fun of. I think it was Morris. I think it was Morris. And she felt bad about it.
Right. Yeah, yes. I thought that was a nice touch how she was laughing and he was like, you were ashamed of that. Or I can't remember what line, what he said.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was like, you're ashamed. I think it was you were ashamed that you made him feel
bad. He said something. He's all like, you were embarrassed by that incident.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And then that's when she shifted because she was trying to cover it up of like, oh, it was funny and stuff like that. And he's like, no, you were embarrassed. Like, you're trying to like mask how you're actually really feeling. And the fact that she got caught is where she put up her walls.
Yeah. That was a subtle moment. It's like, they didn't even have to put that in the episode, but I like that they did. Cause it gave some nice nuance to that whole thing.
Yeah. And there was a moment where he was all like reading each other's mind is, I think he said it was very intimate. I think he said,
yeah.
And she's like, yes, very, we should go. She was really trying hard because she didn't want to have those floodgates open.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very intimate.
Because she knew where it was going to go.
One of the lines that was...
Sharing of thoughts and feelings is quite compelling.
Somebody mentioned it earlier, maybe it was you, Dan, when Picard says there are times when it is necessary for a captain to give the appearance of confidence. That's the thing I remember most from this episode. I remember everything about this episode because it's a great episode. I've seen it a bunch of times. But that line... That line has been sort of a helpful lesson in various scenarios. And it's kind of an interesting thing because it's this idea that you might have to, like, that a component of leadership might be deception.
And you don't really know, do you?
Sort of what are the moral implications of that?
You don't have the slightest idea what I'm talking about, do you?
Depending on the... I mean, I do.
Well, that's what she was saying around the time he was saying what he was saying.
Yeah. But that I always found that really interesting. And so that sticks out at me. And the other thing that sticks out at me from this episode is Picard's sexy shirt in that last scene where he's got
And it's
that,
the same shirt that he wore in Lessons with Nella Darren.
Yeah. He pulls it out. He's like, it's happening tonight.
It's his getting it on shirt.
It's happening tonight. I got to put on that fluffy, the shirt with the, I don't know, the pleats. Like a million pleats. I don't know what you'd call that on a shirt.
When he
it looked very comfortable though.
When he said
one of us is hungry,
was he joking? Like when he said one of us is hungry, was he, or did he really not know? Were they so linked together that they couldn't tell which one was hungry?
I couldn't tell if he was being cute or not. Yeah, because I could see it would be kind of interesting if you were linked.
I think he wasn't really sure. He was like, someone's hungry. I can't tell.
My grandmother used to make it with peas, carrots, and
Beverly.
Beverly.
See, he was hungry because
you're
he's
making
like,
me hungry.
I don't want to hear about food.
They were both hungry.
We shall see.
Because I'm a child, when they had that scene where they learned that they both became very ill if they walked too far from each other, and they made the funny voices, my childish brain just couldn't stop thinking about how funny it would be if they just started projectile vomiting all over
them. They were just like, "That's what it looked like he was going to."
I know, because Picard, he really looked like he was just
like that scene from The Sandlot or the second Problem Child movie, or maybe it was the first Problem Child movie.
What's the movie where somebody just...
Did anyone see Problem Child?
Yeah, of course.
I think it was Problem Child.
With Gilbert Gottfried.
It was either the first or the second.
Gilbert Gottfried was the principal.
I know there was a... I don't know if it was
the
first or
second.
Kindergarten Cop? Kindergarten Cop.
No, it wasn't in Kindergarten. It was so the two movies I remember, it's either Problem Child 1 or 2, and it was also in The Sandlot. There were big vomiting scenes.
What's the movie where the people just keep puking all over each other?
That's Problem Child.
No, but there's one that's not Problem Child.
Yeah, it is, because like...
And it's like, it's shooting out like a hose. It's comical, and they start slipping in it, and... There's
well, then Problem Child, like the parents are puking on their child, and like
I remember that part.
And in Sandlot, they're going on some ride, and there's projectile vomit.
That's
flying
a good one
out.
Too. And then there's the Goonies, where you just hear about it from Chunk. He talks about using the fake vomit, and then everyone started puking, and then he started puking. That's a good scene. And
you're absolutely right.
In the Goonies.
I heard that.
I bet you did, Dan.
My pleasure.
What else? What other good stuff? Bits and bobs.
That rock door, when they opened that rock door, there was
rock
like,
door.
But it looked like a big piece of styrofoam.
Rock door sounds like some kind of a dinosaur robot name.
It was like a cave rock door.
Stage was just put classic, together in 2 seconds.
Classic like styrofoam looking
set.
Well,
and it's also, this is one of those episodes where there's the hilarious juxtaposition between the goofy stage and then the beautiful Southern California
outside
park. You know, because it's when they do an episode, there's one or the other. You know, the contrast isn't there. You know, you can have it like all in the styrofoam caves and it looks great because they're just only in the styrofoam caves with a bunch of rubber plants. But when they're out in the park in Griffith Park or wherever they're filming, and then they go into the weird cave or whatever.
There must be a lava flow or an underground hot spring somewhere near here.
Maybe you had lava. I could have done a better job.
There were a lot of tomfoolery in this episode. We already mentioned Picard's making the goofy puking face. There's also not only Picard running at the prison door, which was just sort of silly.
Yeah, that was super silly.
But when they got let out, you know, they put in the code and they got let out, and then they walked like the one direction, and then they walked the other direction, and they're all like doing like a Pink Panther walk or something. They look really goofy. They're all
this is ridiculous.
I mean, it was a little silly and a little ridiculous. And then the best gag of the whole episode. Of the entire episode, the best gag was Morix. Every time they go to his room, there's more and more ridiculous shit.
Right, there was a sparkle ball, and like I said, it looked like a cappuccino machine, and it looked insane. Like this,
it
like,
was silly, but in a funny way.
I know, it was great. I thought it was fantastic.
I love the outdoor stuff. There's because they were at Bronson Caves.
Oh, okay.
So near the Hollywood sign, and there's a photo of where they took a picture of Gates and Patrick in between scenes, and there's a Hollywood sign.
That's great. That's so funny.
Like, and their Starfleet outfits, it's hilarious.
Yeah. What is going on here?
They're all like scooting down a hill. It was just like, I hope they're okay. They're all scooting down the hill. Remind me of Lord of the Rings.
There's a blooper on that too. When they're going down the hill and then they stop and they have to walk backwards because they were going to get caught.
Yeah.
She stepped on Patrick's foot and he's all like, oh shit. He's like, Gatesy stepped on my, she's like, I'm so sorry. He's like,
I thought they had a good stunt double when Picard got like, he flew backwards down the hill. Like it was a side shot.
That guy was dropping.
Yeah, it was.
And Gates was running. She was trying to catch up.
And the stunt double they had was good because it was a side shot, so you could theoretically see like most of his face and be able to tell it was Patrick Stewart, but it wasn't Patrick Stewart, and it was hard to tell because it was like, it's amazing to me how they shoot these stunt shots in such a way that you can't tell who it is. Like, that's great on the stunt person's part, but also the camera person's part, you know, how they can put
it all
together.
And the editor. I would put the editor in that.
I wonder if they purposely smudged the face up a little bit to make it harder to make out during those scenes. Because like you could see half his face. You should have been able to tell who that was when he fell backwards.
Yeah, they probably use a little bit of soft focus.
A little smudge.
Other odds and ends or bits and bobs before?
I'm sorry.
Jesse, guest Jesse.
Odds
and ends. I think I mentioned all my extra little bits.
I'm sorry.
There's so much going on. There's just these little things, even just the Worf stuff, because he's obviously annoyed.
I love
and
the
he's
Worf
like, I'm
going
to lose my job if we don't find them. Riker is just getting pissed off and is like, I'm done. But it was weird not having Geordi and then Troy being more prominent and trying to get them back.
Yeah,
I get it.
For the problem solving, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this is mostly Picard and Crusher, but still, you know.
You could almost say Worf's whole arc was like a C story because, like, he was getting more and more pissed off at Morik. And that was after he was already, like, terrified because he was like, oh, shit, I lost them. But, like, every scene he's with Morik, he's, like, getting more, he's making another face. But,
it's
like
a bumbling day in the office. like it could be filmed like an episode of The Office with Worf talking to the camera and just being like, ugh.
And you know how Worf just feels like shit after he loses Picard or something happens to Picard and he's like, I'm the security officer. Yeah. I'm supposed to protect him.
This is my one job.
This is my one job. And not only did I lose the captain, but the chief medical officer.
Yeah.
Here's a little end note real fast. Why did Beverly go with Picard to the planet to do this?
Yeah, that's not explained. Just
a good question.
What's the point?
I don't know. Just want to hang out. Oh, maybe they have some good fabric down there. She wanted to get a bolt of some sort of fabric in there in the local bazaar.
No one quite understands of why she needed to go down for these.
That's a good point.
It's
never explained.
Yeah, it's just
like, why? Yeah. Beverly.
Typically, they would bring Troy, right? So that's why.
Yeah, because for diplomatic stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. That was just a thought.
When Riker was talking to Lauren and was saying, I think it's time we all sat down together and tried to work this out. And Lauren was like, that is your misfortune. We have nothing to say to either of you. In other words, she's saying, it's not our fault that we captured your doctor and captain. It's your misfortune.
Yeah.
Like, that's like that whole, like, it's like, you're making me do this. This is your
fault. Why are you hitting yourself?
I love the part where they were all like, we need to sit down. And he's like, I'm not going to sit down. But they both were like, well, I'm not going to sit down. Yeah. He's like, fine, we'll stand.
Yeah. And he's like looming over
I'm
them.
I'm not taking your shit.
He's like, I'm a fucking giant.
And like, I love at the end, like Riker, like, puts them all so much in their place. He just like leaves them alone. Lauren and Morik together alone to be sad, basically.
So they're
going to
make out? Because they're going to make out?
Yeah. No, not that they're going to make out.
They're going to have a whole sitcom
together. He's forcing them to communicate.
All right. She's all sad and he's just kind of like all...
Before we close things down, what secrets would your brain reveal if we were connected? Let's start with Dan.
That is not funny.
You don't want to reveal your innermost secrets on the podcast?
I don't know. I don't know.
I bet I can guess, Dan. I'll make a few guesses. I'll make a few
Your information is incorrect.
Dan's mayonnaise. You should start a mayonnaise brand. You like mayonnaise. You could make mayonnaise at home.
You like to say mayonnaise.
You could jar mayonnaise at home and sell it.
This is ridiculous.
All right, it is. And we are past our time here today, so...
I am not being unreasonable.
We will say we have concluded our discussion of TNG's Attached, a classic episode.
Yay. Make sure you take all this junk with you.
Extremely well written, so much character development, and it's one of the good ones in season 7. I think, Dan, earlier you were talking about how season 7 is a little bit up and down. But yeah, it's because they're trying some new things. They're throwing some stuff at the wall. They're resolving some dangling plot threads.
Dangling participles.
That they're like, why not start resolving them now as we're winding things down and shifting into movie mode?
Of course. Of course.
So that was great. Jesse, guest Jesse, regular Jesse is over there.
Jesse Convo. Jesse Crusher.
Guest Jesse. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Crusher Convo podcast, where people can find it, and what you'll be talking about next.
Yeah, so First off, I want to say it's a pleasure to finally be on your guys' show. I've been listening to you guys for the last 2 years as I've done my Star Trek journey. So I thank you for helping me through all that because I've learned a lot.
Oh, thank you.
And also know to laugh with all the ridiculousness that Star Trek brings. But if you love Beverly Crusher as much as I do, you can find me at Crusher Comma Podcast, where I deep dive episodes and topics through the eyes of Dr. Beverly Crusher. You could find all the information at crusherconvo.com. You could find me on YouTube, Instagram, and Threads. So yeah, I love just talking about Beverly and all things Star Trek. So if you love it, hit me up.
Thank you so much, Desi. We're so glad you were able to join us, and I highly recommend Crusher Convo.
Catch a Crusher Convo, put it in your pocket, never let it fade away.
That's my new theme song for next season.
Catch a Crusher Convo, put it in your pocket, save it for a rainy day.
Now, I'm still trying to figure out the Crusher Condos, Patrick. Oh, yes. I haven't Crusher really condo. Been able to push that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yet. Yeah, Crusher Condos. You got to figure that out. Maybe buy some good swamp. Land yeah. somewhere.
Well, we got to just pick an area and just run with it.
Well, thank you for being
in Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah, it could be in Ohio. Ohio's big. It's got a lot of space.
A lot of flatland. Let's just go there.
Well, flatland, go to Oklahoma. That's a lot of flatland.
Yeah. Dan, you were in the middle of thanking Jesse.
Or there's that book Flatland, right?
Yes.
About math.
Yeah.
Where the three-dimensional shape goes to the 2D land and the 2D shape goes to the 1D land. Yeah.
You don't need to show off that you know about the Flatland.
No, I'm reminding you what it's about. Show off. Oh, I read a book. I'm showing off because I read a book. I'm talking about a book. I must be showing off. Hey, guys, I read a book.
You're have so you ever, pretentious.
Have you ever done that, one of those before? Have you ever read a book? Well, I have. I'm super smart because I read a book. Look,
pretentious, moi.
Just
thank
one.
You, Jesse. Thank you for coming on our podcast and being on our podcast and talking. It was a pleasure,
Jesse.
And it was an honor.
Jesse often has very charming guests on her on Crusher Convo, so people should check it out.
Yes.
All right. Okay. As for us,
you're right.
As for us, it's got Star Trek. That has been It's Got Star Trek. Is that how we say it? That's been It's Got Star Trek. We never discussed
been.
It.
No.
We do not know yet what we'll be discussing next week. I'm guessing a good chance it'll be maybe a TOS. I'm thinking.
That's not true.
I'm feeling TOS. I think TOS is next in line. You can find out by checking our website at itsgotstartrek.com. With a www in front. You got www.itsgotstartrek.com. It's got the security and everything. It's got the little lock symbol and everything.
It was very intimate.
Yeah, we got certificates and everything you need. So you don't gotta feel shady about going to the website.
Does it work?
It works quite well. one thing that works excellently on the website is that if you like to, you can sort by series.
Do you do this all the time?
We don't say this at the end of every podcast, but you can sort by series because say you just want to go through and listen to all our episodes we've done on Voyager. You can click on Voyager and boom, they'll all come up.
What do you mean?
I think it's self-explanatory, Dan. Or should I say Dr. Crusher? Email.
You don't really know, do you?
If you want to email us, you can get us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record. We mentioned earlier Patreon. We should mention that it's patreon.com/itsgotstartrek, if that were not obvious. We also are on all the various social medias with the little at symbol that looks like kind of like a snail.
It was a strange sensation.
At symbol, it's got Star Trek. And you can find us there, YouTube, Facebook, Threads, Twitter, all that jazz. Mastodon, we're on Mastodon.
I'm thirsty too.
And yeah, keep an eye on that. You'll find out what we'll be discussing next week. Anything else? Did I miss
it? Now we're friends.
Yes, now we're all friends. all right, that'll be it for us this week. Again, thank you so much, Jesse. Thanks, Dan, and other Jesse, regular Jesse, trouble.
Thank you.
Jesse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Minister.
And we'll talk to you all next week. Bye bye.
Good night.
Pressure out.
You're concerned that the Kess are going to be admitted to the Federation.
Correct.
As first officer of the Enterprise, I think I can promise you that is not going to happen. The Kess will be denied membership.
You have no authority to make that decision. Despite whatever games you played with Prit when you arrived, we still plan to take our petition directly to the Federation Council. They'll listen.
They will also listen to the reports of the captain of the Enterprise and his first officer. And I can tell you right now, the first officer's report will go something like this.
They bind us close.
between a heaven and hell. Across space, our spirits fly, bound by truth, can't deny. Entangled threads, forever stay in this cosmic love ballet.
This is ridiculous.